Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, and welcome to another My History Podcast. I'm your host, Alexander Woods, and it's been a minute, so let me go ahead and apologize. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute, and I'm starting it kind of a little late, I want to do a season a year, so I want to apologize to you fellow listeners, probably two of you, maybe three. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I've been gone for a long while, a good year. I have got a new computer, got a new editing program. Links are in the description. Boop. And if you're listening and not watching on YouTube, this is just the audio that you're hearing. So what is new and what is going on? Well, this year, I'm going to try to focus more on bringing some good content, talking with some really educated individuals. Not that I didn't talk to educated individuals before, just that I want to continue that trend. Today, you'll be hearing from Darrell Slaughter, a former commissioner in the city of Lansing, as he details his a little bit of his upbringing, how he came to Lansing, and how he did become the commissioner. It's a great and a fun time that we both had, just like understanding each other and talking about his life. And this is where I made my mistake. I didn't record all of it. Partway through, you'll realize there's a noise here. Whatever noise it'll be in post, you'll hear it. And I'll play it one more time. Okay, that was a noise. So that will let you know that that's the mistake that happened. I didn't record all of the video because my camera had died. So as a way to continue the content, we just basically met up again and didn't really start off from where we left off, but continued on in of his upbringing and him coming into Lansing and so forth. I don't want to tease too much. So anyways, thank you for joining me. Happy Black History Month, and let's go ahead and get right into it. There'll be another episode later on of just me talking, just letting you guys know, just kind of me teasing right now, of letting you guys know what's to expect this year. So let's get right into it. Thank you for tuning in, and as always, peace, love, and prosperity. Roll the clip.
They'll ask for some of our stuff, or we'll take some of their tests. So it's like we get everybody in Michigan, so, and some.
Definitely, it sounds like job security. Sounds like
I'm like really liking is the job security part.
No shortage of testing, I'm sure. So
for sure. What are you doing now? What's
Yeah,
you're not the commissioner anymore. So.
I'm not. What am I doing, man? I mean, I'm pretty much like going back to my day job or just working on my day job full time. So I work for this organization, Natural Resource Defense Council. Environmental advocacy organization, so you know, really involved in a lot of like the energy work, climate policy work that's happening at the state level. So I mean, that's keeping me busy in it itself. So like, not like I'm getting like always some hours back from like not having to go into meetings throughout the day and the evening as a county commissioner. But look, I'm gonna be busy with that. So but besides that, trying to figure out like, you know, well, take some time for myself to kind of, you know, decompress from like 4 years of, you know, being on the county commission, which, you know, it can add some
age.
You know, there's a picture really on 2018. And you look at me now, I mean, there you can see some wrinkles. I saw on my way, I have like a couple gray hairs in my beard now. I'm like, my goodness, geez. I'm not going to contribute at all to county commission, but, you know, this is probably just the stress of, one, just the stress of living in these times, you know, the pandemic and all that, but then later on, let's all the other stuff that's been happening, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a better answer soon, you know. Yeah, you'll have to circle back with me a couple months, though.
All right, I'll circle back on that. But, I mean, that's still good. You're finding some time to relax. You're finding some time to kind of reacclimate back to not only these, you know, harsh times that everyone has been dealing with, but also just, you know, in your own, like, finding, okay, I did all that.
Yeah.
That was good, but let's get back to me focusing on me. So you're basically in your post-Obama.
man, that's, you put a lot on me. No, I mean, and so I mean, I get what you're saying. But no, it seems like no, this will be a time for me to do some like deep reflection. You know, I've been doing a lot of this work for like a decade plus. You know, either working on campaigns or like organizations, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and then like kind of the capstone was running and being on the county commission for 4 years, which really proud of that. And now, you know, yeah, having that time to kind of just think about like what's next for me. I mean, you know, I don't have a family of my own, so thinking about things like, you know, what kind of work do I need to do on my own self to like get myself ready for having a family of my own. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of, yeah, just like all the opportunities are out there for me, and just taking the time, taking it one day at a time, though. So
yeah, what does they say? That the world is your oyster, or something like that, or the oyster in the world,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
right?
No, that is the same, okay. Though. Yeah, it's not quite that way. I don't, you know, I'm not as free and just whatever in terms of trying things out. But I do have like more space and more time to kind of think about. You know, there's some creative ventures that I might want to get into. You know, this podcast, I mean, I've been thinking about, is there interest in me doing a podcast, or just,
I'm sure
there is. Just kind of just seeing like what's out there, because a lot of people out there, you know, using their talents, you know, right. Also monetizing, they're making some money out there, you know, as well. So
yeah,
I want to kind of explore, see what's out there. So
yeah, any like thing that's like right on your mind immediately, like this is something I'm wanting like starting to venture toward, or is it, you know, you're still just, you know, perusing and seeing what else is out there?
I'd be lying if I said I like fully like locked in on something. Mm-hmm. But the podcast thing, or if it's like some type of, for like a newsletters, you know.
Yeah.
I am still a very much like a civic minded person. I pay attention to what's happening. I'd probably never be like a not, like, I'll always be paying attention to what's happening in politics and government, mm-hmm. locally, state, national. My perspective, I think, could be interesting, given my, you know, tenure on the county commission, my work I do, I've been doing for years in the environmental space. You know, I can speak on a lot of issues, quite a few issues. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking about that. You know, looking at YouTube, you know, kind of seeing how to set up like a YouTube channel and like understand how it works to kind of get things uploaded and all that. So I think if there's one thing that's been probably a little more immediate in terms of like thinking about doing something, it's that. But outside of that, it really is like just kind of like wrapping my arms around the work that I'm doing, my day job, mm-hmm. which, you know, we could talk about, but there's just so much happening at the state level and federal level in terms of opportunities to advance clean energy and climate funding for making houses more efficient, buildings, like churches, you know, that could be more efficient, those sorts of things. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. So that probably wasn't even like a
that ties into what, you know, what you're saying. Like, you have all these different avenues you want to go through. So it ties perfectly in.
Yeah.
Actually, it reminds me of this article I read, mm-hmm. when you speak about housing and making housing affordable.
Yep.
The article was talking about how, I think it was released at Lancet Journal,
mm-hmm.
How Michigan, we're kind of underbuilding by a whole lot. Like Michigan, we have, on a healthy side of things, we're supposed to be building 33,000 homes a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in the last past 5 years, the most of we've maxed out at is like 17,000 homes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, there are factors that lead to that, you know, the pandemic, and then you have a supply chain of, you know, different materials, and you have supply of workers, things of that nature, and then the demand for housing, people who can afford housing.
It's crazy.
So like those things that are happening. So, you know, having affordable housing is something, you know, I think is an area that not the grand public really understands and really thinks about. And when you say affordable housing, do you think just affordable just because the person has the paycheck to pay for it, mm-hmm. or affordable in terms of the building materials and the land usage, mm-hmm. And how that is affordable on a community side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other things like that, you know, that when you say that comes to mind, that, and then I've been hearing the 3D printing houses, which is, it sounds cool. I've seen some of it, like, you know, not in person, but on YouTube or whatever, just how they print these houses. And it's like, it's cool. It's just, is that affordable, you know, type of thing.
So. And I'm ignorant. I am aware of like the 3D printed homes and all that, and I have seen they do look kind of cool. But like, I guess I don't know enough to like speak on it, if it's like a real solution for figuring out like for addressing our housing shortage. But you are right. In this state, like affordable housing, like or the lack of affordable housing, is a huge crisis. I think people may, probably on the macro level, like you were just saying, probably don't know that we have this huge shortage. I think people more so can feel it, that shortage of houses. Not just, and you know, there's a, I think there's a need for houses for low income folks, you know, and then like, I think people sometimes forget, you know, that, that missing middle. So maybe those middle income folks too, like there's not a ton of like options like for like middle income housing. And I know this was for the fact like in Ingham County, we definitely have this issue, affordable housing, but also those like those houses for folks who are more in that middle income range there. So. You know, as we're talking about this stuff, though, I think we also have a huge opportunity to use like a lot of this like federal dollars are coming down to like make these houses like more energy efficient. You know, there's opportunity to put this new technologies on there to make our homes, you know, heat our homes more efficiently. Called heat pumps. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah, they're a technology that's been around for a long time. They had for years had gotten a bad rep, but they're way more efficient. Like companies like I'm blanking on something. Mitsubishi, you know, which you know, people, I think people at one point thought of them as a car company.
Right.
They do. They make these heat pumps that heat your home and can cool your home as well. Hmm. Anyway, it's better than it's better to use that type of technology as opposed to as we're looking at folks who use propane to heat their homes or or gas. You know, I think those are some major opportunities we're addressing, like the affordable housing problem. But yeah, you're right. I mean, as well, even when I was like for a few years ago, I was looking for some housing, like even this rental property, I couldn't even find anything. And so luckily I was able to find some like a place to buy, and it worked out. But today I know it's few and far between in terms of like where people can choose to live, you know, which that shouldn't be the case. So
right I think it was my brother, he had bought his house back in I want to say 2018.
Okay.
It was around 2018, so way before like this craze.
That's actually when I bought my house.
Okay.
In 2018.
Right? All right, perfect timing then, I guess. Yeah. That was the time. Buy a house 2018. Sorry you missed it.
That was the end.
And then, you know, I've been hearing, you know, obviously everybody's kind of probably heard of it. You know, the time to sell was in the, you know, if not now, a couple years ago when everyone was looking to get out of, you know, their cities, to go to a new area to kind of build themselves a different career because of COVID, because of, you know, where the economic crisis was at. So, I mean, it probably, I mean, prices are still high for a lot of things.
I was going to say, like, when I bought my house, I mean, I'm not going to, like, say the actual
amount. Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I have seen a percentage increase. You know, even though it's kind of fluctuate, like you're saying, but it's still up there.
It's still higher than, like, what you bought it for. So, like, it's a great seller's market. If you bought two homes, you know, go ahead and sell that second one. But, you know, it's not a buyer's market. It's what, you know, some people would say. Because it's like you're buying at the top end. And you're not going to probably get those returns back years later. I mean, you have to be some years later. So it's quite a conundrum we're in right now. Speaking of me, it's wanting to buy a house, but I'm like, I can't. I just can't.
Seriously. I mean, again, we have all this money that at the state level and more coming from the federal government in terms of being able to help, like, at least, like, scratch the surface of the issue. It's going to take, like, decades of or... it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to like dig ourselves out of the hole to meet that minimum. You said 33,000.
It was like 33,000 was what was considered to be healthy for Michigan. 30,000 homes built every year to be considered healthy for Michigan. But right now we're in the most of 5 years. I think the data stopped at like 21 or 2020. So like the most that's been built was 17,000. So we're well under that healthy range of, that they consider.
And I wonder if part of the shortage or part of the delay in like building some of these homes is like workforce shortage.
Yeah.
Lack of like folks who know how to like get in and do construction. You know, I think that's a huge opportunity for like trades, you know, folks who jump and get in trades and learn. We should be taking advantage of that. So.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of trades and as someone who fell into the not that college isn't for everybody, and I have a degree, and I'm happy that I did what I did, but I'm also still paying for what I did, and it's kind of like, well, I probably could have been a welder. I enjoy working on cars, you know. I enjoy like doing things with my hands. I probably would have been, you know, better for me to do that. But you know, hindsight looking back, 2020, it is what it is. But yeah, I'm a big proponent of trades. Yeah. My nephew, he's into computers. So I'm like, you should try to see what we can do with that. Or, you know, find, if you can't do something like that, find like, I don't know, a plumber. They make, I think it was on average $60,000 a year. Like, they're doing, you know, either level one or level two plumber, whatever the designated terms of journeyman.
Yep.
They make good amount of money when, I guess, the national average of a male in his 30s is about $44,000 to $45,000 a year. So give me them pipes.
Yeah. Like you said, college is great. I have no regrets going to college. I got a great education at Michigan State. You know, go green. But no, if I was like, if I kind of had some options and like was trying to figure it out, the trades are like a no-brainer. Because this work is not going to end like anytime soon. We're looking at decades, like you said, of housing work, a lot of this clean energy work that's going to be happening. Like there's a need for people with the skill set. And yeah, I know there's like people who need jobs too. So we just need to do a better job of marrying those two things. So.
Well, I don't want to get too on this down.
No.
Because we can probably talk about this, you know, a whole lot more. But as per my history, it's a story that you want to tell that I have no idea what it is, but I'm excited to know what it is. So please, Darrell, let the people know what story you have today. You can.
Absolutely. So
we can go back and forth. It's good.
I'll just talk about like how I even got to Lansing. I mean, this my journey to Lansing. I actually had never been. No, I had never been to Lansing.
Because you're an OG Detroiter.
No, I'm Detroit. So I was born in Detroit. Mom and dad went to school in Detroit. Born and raised. Still family in Detroit, but grew up in the outskirts. But always, you know, West Bloomfield, which is like 20-25 minutes outside of Detroit.
I was gonna say Macon. I was like, well, that's not Detroit.
No. And I'm sensitive. Like, especially if you're down from down there, like you don't like claim like you
Detroit
know,
if you're not from Detroit.
Yeah, they don't do that. So no, I'm like, I'm from here, but I got people from down there. But anyway.
Yeah.
But so the way I got up to come to Lansing originally, I came up here originally to go to school. Even before that, I was going to Wayne State University. In Detroit, great school. It was a commuter school at the time. I mean, they didn't have a great like on-campus atmosphere. A lot of people just went to school from the suburbs and drove down to Wayne State. And this is like 06, 05, 06 around that time when I first got to Wayne State. You know, it was fine, but I was getting tired. I was living at home. You know, I just had like a little job, just going to school, commuting to class and going home. Had friends that were at Michigan State, at Central, at Western, and I'm looking at them and hearing about them like, man, you need to, why are you still
parties?
Yeah.
The fun.
You know, at the last thing, they would emphasize the party first and a good education. No, definitely, but like this, the social scene, the networking, the networking that existed there. I talked to like family members, like like mom, dad, because you know I couldn't just do this on my own. I wasn't of individual wealth at the point. I had to get some benefactors. So I had to go around with my hat and get some money. So, but my mom, you know, dad, grandma, you know, managed to cobble money together to help me for like at least my first couple of years of going out to Lansing to go to Michigan State. Really happy that I had that type of support, had that option to me. I actually, one of the things that happened to me, I actually didn't initially get into Michigan State when I went up to Lansing. I was a little bit ahead of, I put the cart ahead of the horse, however that saying goes.
Yeah.
And so I went to LCC for a few years. It actually ended up being one of the best like decisions I did because I'll just be honest, I was pretty down about like not being able to straight up transfer into Michigan State. There was a few classes I hadn't taken at Wayne State. In the one class, I think I had to retake. I didn't do as well. Math, I'm not a math guy.
That's all right. It's the same thing with me. Statistics was fine.
So you feel me?
Yeah.
So ended up like spending a few years like going to like LCC. Didn't go like. I went like for a year, maybe a year and a half, like took some time off, but I went for like, you know, over the years. But while I was doing that, spent a lot of time like networking. I did a few internships at the Michigan House. I got a chance to, that's where I actually met, you know, our, you know, senator, like Sarah Anthony. That's where we became friends. This was back in 08, 09, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I spent time, like, I was just hustling. I was going to LCC, working. I was volunteering, like, for example, the NAACP, Lansing NAACP. Had worked on a few local campaigns, you know, over the years while I was trying to work towards getting out of LCC and going to MSU.
Okay.
So
you started at Wayne with what degree?
Political science.
Political science. So that,
surprise, right?
Yeah. So yeah. You're already like in the whole idea of being a political person in yourself. I guess at Wayne, mm-hmm. what was your dream 6 years later of what you seen yourself doing, I guess, in the political sphere?
Yeah, I did political science. I didn't like know if I actually didn't want to ever run for office. I always just wanted to kind of just work behind the scenes as a campaign manager, which, you know, I ended up doing, mm-hmm. done a few times. But I did that because I always cared about issues in high school. Like my whole life, I always cared about like social justice issues, mm-hmm. Particularly issues that affect Black people. You know, I think very early on, I developed like a real appreciation for like, you know, our tradition of fighting against injustice and racism and all that. And I think it really started with seeing, there was this documentary back in the 80s, early 90s, it gets shown every once in a while on PBS mm-hmm. called Eye on the Prize. Okay. It was a civil rights documentary. I don't remember, I think it was Ken Burns maybe who did it, but
I'll find it in the description.
Yeah, no, that's a great documentary, where they chronicled the entire, like, well, a huge chunk of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. But I remember the story, this is when I was in elementary school, I first saw this, and the story that really resonated with me was about Emmett Till, the story about his murder. And I remember being a kid,
you need to go see the movie?
I haven't seen it. I'm going to go see it, though. Okay. I'm going to go see it, but, you know, I'll just be honest, like, it's hard, you know, it's kind of, you know, that, especially given the history of that, you know, this is how I first really became really aware and conscious at a young age.
Yeah.
First seeing Emmett Till, like seeing his death, like documented in that movie. And so I think that combination of that, seeing that, and then just like my mom, she was not the most politically active person, but mm-hmm. like just kind of seeing how she worked and had to deal with stuff, you know, she's a single mom caring for, you know, two young boys, mm-hmm. just kind of seeing her work ethic, but seeing her, all the struggles she had to do in order to make sure we had a life there. So, but yeah, so all that, so that led me to wanting like, hey, when I go to college, I want to study political science. I don't know what I want to actually do. I just know I don't want to necessarily like be like elected official, but I want to either be, you know, work in like the halls of power, you know, in our Michigan legislature or in Congress, U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. But you know, while I was at Wayne State, I actually had a great professor, a gentleman named David Bullock, who, you know, I talked to after class quite a bit about different philosophies, about different political issues. You know, the big issue I was at, or big question I was asking him, I said, "Hey, you know, Professor Bullock, this is like 07, like I said, civil rights movement feels like it's been a long time. You know, I don't see like, I mean, while obviously there's a bunch of injustices around us, but like, what's the next big movement? Like, what's the next thing like for like a young person in college like, to really plug into? I didn't know, you know, I'm learning, I'm soaking up stuff."
That's a good question to ask the professor. So it's good insight and foresight.
It led to us having like some really great conversations after class. Eventually we, you know, developed a good partnership. We had formed an organization called Green Nation, which is actually was a starting point of how I even got into like environmental issues or energy issues. Didn't have any background or real connection. Seems kind of random, right?
Right.
Actually, you know, I think back to you know, I maybe subconsciously I had a connection to energy issues. My aunt actually worked for Detroit Edison DTE down in Detroit, but I never like, you know, she was an engineer and worked at one of the nuclear plants. But I never said, hey, I want to necessarily go into work in that field. But I, you know, I respected her and I was like, oh, that's cool. You work for, you know, this seems really important. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know how it works, you know, but it seems really important. But anyway, but subconsciously that probably was there. But least like consciously, that's how I first got into thinking about environmental issues. And it really started off thinking about, what is the next big opportunity for, or opportunity to help advance, you know, Black folks and, you know, all facets of life, you know, mm-hmm. health, you know, economically, you know, educationally, so on and so forth. And, you know, at the time there was and he's still around, Van Jones. I don't know if you're familiar with film.
Hey, this is Alexander here. I found out who Van Jones was. Actually, I knew about him before, but I didn't know, like, the face. So when I looked back doing the editing, I was like, oh, that's Van Jones. I've seen him on CNN a bunch of times. Anyway, sorry for the interruption. Let's get right back into it, shall we?
He's a commentator on CNN, but back then he used to be really big into green jobs and was out in Oakland, California, helping to promote green jobs, particularly green jobs for folk returning offenders and other low-income folks there. Yeah, and so, it was a great inspiration to me and my former professor, and had a book that came out, The Green Job Economy. Read that. That was kind of like a good basis also for me, like learning and getting into this space. But from there, we, you know, this partnership we formed, and actually, so he knew that I was going to transfer to Michigan State. Actually, it was beneficial to us because our plan was to go around to different cities all over the state, which we did do, to talk to different local officials and local leaders about, like, hey, you know, make sure. It's actually kind of deja vu. There at the time was talking about federal dollars coming down for the same type of thing, green jobs and that sort of thing. We'll make sure this time, like, we get more of those dollars into our community.
So the program is still ongoing currently?
It was a separate program. This is back in 08, 09. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like deja vu because it was like a federal law that sent all this money down to different states to do, like, clean energy work.
And, right.
But different circumstances. I think this time we'll actually get a lot more done this go around. But yeah, started off like going around to different cities saying, hey, you know, you're gonna have these federal dollars come down. You know, we try to work with them to make sure they prioritize, like, black their black citizens. You know, and making sure that there's contractor work, or make sure you're, you know, distributing those dollars in an equitable way. You know, huge task. It was fun. Didn't know what the heck I was doing. Just had a lot of passion. And he, you know, he was a very, you know, smart guy, but still, he was new to this, you know, in terms of his understanding too. But just recognized that it was a big opportunity, and there's a lot of benefits that could really help black folks in Michigan across the country. But from there, yeah, that's how I developed a lot of relationships in Lansing, because, you know, in addition to traveling around in the state, you know, talk to a lot of local electeds, you know, it's a lot of state legislators from around the state, because they're all in Lansing, so I could talk to the Detroit legislator in Lansing, you know, so it worked out perfect. I was at Michigan State, you know, kind of doing this thing, and so that's kind of how I got into, like, this, you know, environmental space, but it also coincided with my political activism or activity there. So
That's how you got to the state, and then that's how you got more involved into, you know, environmental protections and making more green jobs affordable, accessible toward, you know, African Americans, or brown and black peoples all around. No, that's really interesting. So you were at LCC, transferred to MSU. What was the transition like? Were you like, okay, this is finally, you know, my life is like bang, 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 it's happening.
Yeah.
Was that like an exciting experience?
Oh, like, man, I felt like my life was on hold. I really did. I felt like I had a huge weight on my shoulder. It was kind of like, so this was the frustrating part for me. Because I, like, carried myself, even, you know, I'm older now, but, you know, back then when I was like in my early 20s or whatever, I carried myself like older, you know, and I always tried to carry myself with a certain level of dignity and, like, respect, all that sort of thing. So as a result, folks thought I was, like, way older than I was. I never said I was older. I think they just assumed that I was, like, my middle 30s or early 40s.
And you're like, no, I'm like
23. Yeah, I'm still like a young guy, you know, but thank you. And they would always say, no, not because of how you look, because, you know, you look like a baby. No, and I know. I looked relatively young in the face then, you know. But, yeah, that's all. As a result of that, I would get a lot of job opportunities, a lot of, you know, people consider me for a lot of things, but I always felt really guilty because of the fact, you know, I didn't have my degree, you know, and I was kind of going at my pace. So that was really tough to struggle through because, you know, in the eyes of these people I'm working with, they see me as their equal, but by the system, I guess, that the system, and it, thank goodness, it sounds like things are kind of moving away where, you know, if people, they're starting to like take bachelor requirement of bachelor degree and starting to emphasize skills, which I think is probably more realistic for how people operate, especially today. But back then, you had to have that bachelor's degree. So that was always like that weight on my shoulder. Once that happened, I mean, I was definitely happy. I had like a little party, you know, when I graduated from state. I think that like definitely one of my proud moments because I was just happy I got that done, and it paved the way for all the other things I was able to do afterwards. Obviously, running for county commission, my current job, and everything else. So
okay, yeah. And then from MSU, what was your first job? You got your degree. Now you're out. You know, you walked across the stage. You know, all right. Got the cap and gown, you know, all that.
Oh, I threw that. I think I threw that mug up too. Yeah.
You still have it?
Oh, I still have it.
See, I still have mine too.
Yeah. Look, as much money as I'm sure you pay, I pay. Look, I'm gonna always look at things.
Right.
Like I didn't pay just like the, okay, wear this thing one time. No, okay. Right. Oh, at least I'll keep it there.
I thought about selling it, but I was like, I'll just keep it for now.
There probably is a real resale market out there.
Right.
Think about it. Like every few kids.
I got some time to.
Man, I ain't trying to spend all this money. But anyway, so my first job, I was actually pretty fortunate. My first job, I had first job in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for an agency called the Michigan Public Service Commission, which I actually was able to get what they call it's called a student assistantship, which is a really elongated internship. I was able to stay there for, 6 years, 5 to 6 years, and then when I graduated, I was fortunate enough to get a job immediately. So that transition was really just changing my title from student assistant to. I had the good fortune of working for the folks that actually ran the agency. So the agency is run by three individuals. They're called commissioners, and I served as an aide, like a research aide on like policy issues for them, helped them with new energy. There was like energy legislation.
Nice. That's a first job. I mean, that's really nice.
Very fortunate, you know. And I think that's a testament, I think, to all the work I had been doing outside of before having my degree. And, you know, when I was there, you know, as a student assistant, you know, I made sure folks knew who I was. You know, I took on extra work. You know, there was times where I probably was doing, you know, work that a fully full-time staffer would do.
Mm-hmm.
But I took on that extra responsibility because I knew it pay off in dividends in terms of like knowledge, understanding the policy a bit more, understanding how the commission works, state energy policy works a bit more. So, I had a few odd jobs when I first came to Lansing, but like within a year or two, I was again fortunate to get to work for it's called the Michigan Public Service Commission, and to kind of transition. So, long-winded way of saying it was pretty smooth.
All right.
There, so very fortunate there. So,
if you want to be as successful as Darrell here, Michigan Public Service Commission might be your route.
It's a great place. No, it's a great people. They're still there, and I obviously still work within my day job there. Mm-hmm. But energy policy, the energy space is such a rich space right now. I mean, we're looking for a space that has like no job. You're gonna have job security. I mean, that's the space because. We have targets we have to meet. We have these pollution reduction targets that we have to meet in order to avoid some of those like really bad consequences of climate change. And so that's why there's a sense of urgency and people are pumping money. And you know, we're starting to see folks like maybe before people were kind of like pushing against like having to do some of this work. But like, we're starting to see the effects and like we're seeing the data and they're starting to see people come around and starting to be more supportive of like, actually addressing climate change, you know, decarbonizing, how, you know, moving away from like coal and using solar and wind and more energy efficiency, those sorts of things right there. So,
Did you hear speaking of the climate change, another news article came to my head. I think it was ExxonMobil, and I don't remember the article. Maybe I'll find it. Maybe I'll put it in the description. But they were talking about how Exxon, they had their own team of researchers since, I guess, like 1970 or 1980. Who are doing the research on climate change and the effects of gasoline, production and so forth, and the byproducts of it, and the scientists and the researchers came up with the census that burning this stuff, this fossil fuels, is not that great for society. And as we continue, we're going to have these, you know, climate changing effects. And it turns out that Exxon was like, hey, we're going to just shove that to the side and we're not going to really say anything about it. We're actually going to say the opposite, that these scientists are indifferent. They don't know what they're really talking about. And let's just make more money, basically, is kind of the effect. Have you heard?
I'm aware of that. And actually, okay. I can send afterwards, you can send to your listeners. There, PBS actually had a really good documentary, Frontline.
Okay.
Frontline documentary. They had an episode on like this whole very point about climate change in general. But they started off talking about that very report. The utilities knew pretty early on that man had some effect on, you know, the warming of our globe. And so, man, when you think about that type of stuff and like how things could have been avoided,
right.
You know, had like people started taking it serious back then,
right?
The lives that could have been saved.
Yes.
Like the stuff that comes, you know, when you burn coal, like the carbon, the NOx, all those dirty emissions, I mean, they are linked to all types of respiratory diseases.
Yeah.
You are literally, by that stuff burning and getting to the air, I mean, you're literally shortening people's lives. I mean, there's all sorts of studies that back that up. So it infuriates me. I think I know it drives my colleagues. You know, that we should not have to been in this situation, but we're here. You know, and so we're working like the whole utilities account and push them even further. They're starting to get the tune finally, but more needs to be done. This time frame is we don't have a ton of time.
There's two things on that. Yeah, the gasoline. I mean, Michigan, we're the auto capital of the world. You know. And then you got to think about the PFAS situation that's happening as well. We're not the PFAS capital of the world, but like we also, everybody has it in our systems now. And I think Michigan's a good start basis for regulating or deproductionizing, I guess
you call it it's a not friendly word, decarbonization.
There we go.
That doesn't roll off. I've been like, what? You saw my mom?
Right.
Decarbonization. What are you talking about? We have a lot of work to do in terms of decarbonizing our entire like economy. But thank goodness, like Governor Whitmer, like she's taking it serious. She actually put together a group of like experts from around the state last year. It was actually the year before. Folks have been working on this climate action plan for a year and a half or a year plus with all these experts from around the state. I was fortunate to be on this council that helped with the development of this report. And so we have a plan that's in place, you know, how you meet a lot of those goals that we have to get to, and those emission reduction goals, so that we can avoid those terrible outcomes from climate change.
Yeah.
The plan is, it's like a good start, and we're gonna have to update it, but seeing things like, you know, increasing the amount of energy efficiency that all of our utilities have to use. So right now, and I don't have to get into all the policy, but there's a requirement that utilities have to like do things to help their customer reduce their load or how much energy is being used, like 1% every year.
Okay.
In Governor Whitmer's plan, for example, she's saying, hey, we need to ramp that up to 2%. So utilities need to pump more money into doing more energy efficiency. So that means going to folks' homes, coming into churches, and helping to like, you know, put in more energy efficient
systems and everything. That sounds amazing.
The heat pumps I was talking about,
right.
Windows, the roofs, all those sorts of things.
Definitely on windows. I think it was like you can lose a considerable amount of percentage in your own home of heat loss just due to your windows. And it's like, it kind of dawns on you to think about like, when you have a hole in your wall that's, you know, the only thing that's between you and the outside environment is a thin piece of glass. Yeah, that all that heat that you're building up is going to go through those cracks. Or even, you know, certain crevices and attics or basements area where just heat is literally trapped in certain areas. Or you have cold trapped in areas, and it's just always going to make it always going to make your heat bill higher. So
I was just going to say, all that stuff you just said, this, it caused your, you know, your thermostat to read that colder temperature. And what does that do? It causes your heat to constantly run, your furnace to constantly run. I'll give you an example. My house is not the most efficient home in the world. You know, I work on this stuff, and that's not the case right now. I'm going to get, you know, through different programs that are available. But, you know, even my home, but others, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to, for people to not only just, like, for us to meet our carbon reduction goals, mm-hmm. but also to save people money, too.
Yeah.
Again, that furnace constantly having to run, that's because your home is not as efficient as it possibly be. All those things you were saying, mm-hmm. filling in those holes in terms of like letting cold air get in, close those up. You know, there's all types of studies that show that, you know, significant savings in terms of efficiency and straight up just, you know, dollars in folks' pockets as well. So
Right. I think part of it also would be the education of just like telling people, okay, when you buy a home or a Michigan home, when you have a Michigan basement, these are gonna be your issues. These are things you can focus on,
right?
And you know, here are some avenues or some people you can contact to help alleviate these issues to save you thousands of dollars in the long run and increase your property value at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think those are a couple of things that, you know, could be, you know, done, or at least, you know, for homeowners out there, they could probably like take advantage of. Speaking of taking advantage of, what are some programs you're looking for your own house? For you're saying, like, what are things that other homeowners in Lansing can take advantage of also? Who do they contact?
Yeah, so Lansing, like, for example, Lansing Board of Water and Light, they have a whole, like, energy efficiency program if you contact them. I can't, like, rattle off, like, all the specific programs, but I know, for example, they have an energy efficiency program. They have dollars to help offset some of the cost of, you know, some of those upgrades. And I know they've been making changes to those types of programs because they've had them for a while, and there's been evolution, and so... So contacting Board of Water and Light, it helps out a lot. On the gas side, Consumers Energy, they have quite a few programs. I will say, you know, just, you know, they actually contacted me and said, hey, you know, we have these smart thermostats. Mm-hmm. We also will come in and do like a estimate on your home and, you know, make a recommendation on things you need to make changes to, like windows or roofs, so on and so forth.
Lights or anything.
Lights, furnaces, those sorts of things. And I had that done, I think it was either early last year or even the end of the year before. You know, at least at a minimum, while I was talking about my home is still pretty energy inefficient, having that smart thermostat, which, you know, as a person who pays rates, you're, you know, this is your base.
How do you feel about not being a commissioner anymore? Like, how does that... Was there lots of freedom to it, or you feel like you want to fill that time?
No, that's a great question. Well, let's see. I am a month and like a week out not being a commissioner. Probably some mixed feelings. So I think probably like the immediate thing is like, I have this time that has opened up and... Yeah. Which is good. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to go to evening, our meetings are in the evenings. Sometimes we have stuff during the days, obviously answering constituent calls, all that goes away.
Yeah.
But there is like a certain rhythm that you kind of become accustomed to of kind of like, all right, I got to go to a committee meeting. These are decisions that we have before us. And you know, at least with me, I took those decisions very like personal. And so, I feel like a sense of joy and pride in being like the commissioner. So that part I miss. You know, this pure service and doing everything you can to help improve people's lives. But I recognize and why I stepped away is that you know, I can't do it all. I'm not Superman. And, you know, I got to find time for myself and kind of move on to the next phase of my life. So I guess that's a long way of saying it's been bittersweet.
No, that makes sense. I understand that.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I, you know, did BOH, so it is like it feels nice to not have to be there, but also it's more like a bittersweet niceness. Like it's, I would like to be there as... you know, representing or, you know, focusing on the community.
Right.
But speaking of the community events and meetings, are there meetings that you're looking forward to get back into, or you still want to like take a little break before you start getting it back into them?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I'm very fortunate that There's been some folks who are, organizations and groups that are in need of somebody who has kind of like my skill set and, and knowledge. And, you know, obviously been approached like, hey, you know, you'd be great on this board or this. And something that I has been like a lifelong journey is like the art of saying no, which I'm still not great at. If I'm an example of it. If you don't put strong boundaries or get comfortable saying no, you'll run yourself ragged, and you know your emotional, your physical, like energy gets zapped by not having those barriers. And so I'm trying to practice that right now.
Yeah.
Because my tendency, because you asked the question before, or part of your question was like planning on filling that free time with stuff.
Right, right.
And my natural tendency, after give it like a month or so, or maybe around this time, naturally would probably be like, I'm getting restless at night. Let me do some, I want to fill that time up with something. I can't do that. I have to take some time to like really like evaluate what's best for me and with my long-term, you know, vision of not just my professional life, but personally. So, again, long way of saying, I'm not gonna jump into anything. I'm just keeping my eyes open, but I wanna see like what I actually wanna do, and I can't make that decision like a month and like a week out from being a commissioner. So.
Right. No, that makes sense, yeah. That's good, taking that break and so forth. So where we had left off was, you're right in the middle of a conversation and, you know, camera feed cut, and I apologize for that, and I'll have a video, which you've probably already seen it. Anyways, from college, you were in the program with your professor that you were being more green focused and aware of what was going on in Lansing. So from there, you know, you're still focused on the politics and the community aspect. Can you tell a little bit more after, or I guess what I really would want to know is the connection between then coming out and then going into, you know, becoming the commissioner. So what was that jump?
Yeah, that was a journey. In some ways it feels like it was yesterday, but it really, I mean, when I was in the thick of things at the beginning, I mean, we're talking about 13, 14 years ago. I didn't know anything back then. All I had was a bunch of enthusiasm and like a heart for like wanting to help people. And, and particularly, I was particularly focused on Black folks. Like, what can we do to help uplift the quality of life of Black folks so they can be able to take advantage of all the opportunities that we were promised, right, in the Constitution and all that.
40 acres and a mule.
Where's my 40? I don't even have that. You know, they talk about reparations. At San Francisco, actually, they did a study saying $5 million for every Black resident in San Francisco.
I know.
I'm sure you could think of doing $5 million. I know. I could think of a few things, and I'm sure they all can too, as well. You know, for our black viewers, though. But no, that period of time was like the start. Like it was the formation of me starting to understand, like how the policy, politics. How everyday people interact with the system, how it works and doesn't work. And the way I learned that, I think I started to talk about last, you know, it was myself and a former professor of mine when we were having this organization called Green Nation. I guess some of the obvious resistance to the idea of like trying to prioritize like these green dollars like for, you know, for Black folks, you know, and obviously brought into people of color, but for Black folks at that time. And so you really got a chance to see like politicians that, you know, they say things like, oh, we're all for, you know, a lot of words, right? A lot of words. I'm for environmental justice or whatever. When the rubber meets the road, where are the dollars for like Black contractors who can make these upgrades to folks' homes so that they're more energy efficient? You know, the Black contractors who could learn, I guess, get the additional certification to be able to install solar panels, those sorts of things. You know, when the rubber met the road, I mean, I think it was a lot of resistance and just, you know, I think some of that out of this not understanding what was out there, but I think this fear, not trying to make excuses, but
no, it makes sense, though.
I think under, like, going around talking to different elected officials around that time really helped me learn that. And I think probably from that, and probably the early seeds of me being a commissioner, you know, what I wanted to do and make sure I didn't do, because, you know, that's how examples can work too. They can work in the opposite. I don't want to be like that guy or that gal. I want to be
exactly
better. So I think around that time, like kind of my style, and you, Alexander, probably have recognized my style is to be a bit more, like be more accessible, be of the, like the people, not to have this like top down approach to like how you work on policy and move things, really embedding yourself in like working with your constituents on getting stuff done. And I think that comes from, again, that period of time. You know, I really, I always like to say I have a heart of an organizer, because that's how I originally came into that, taking organizer trainings, and so I can learn how to better and more effectively connect people to issues, like environmental issues, like I was advocating for. But yeah, all that stuff back then was really like the foundation for how I would become a commissioner. You know, but if you're talking about more specifics, you know, moving from those mayor elected officials that I was talking to, and doing organizing, and then eventually getting that formal like education, working at the Michigan Public Service Commission, which I was talking about, where, I mean, that is the heart of where energy policy is made, a lot of energy policy. These are the utility regulators. They regulate the big utility like Troy Edison and Consumers Energy. And getting that education, like it was amazing. Being part of like some of the most, I mean, working with some of the most brilliant people on these issues, and seeing how, I guess, as they say, the sausage was made behind the scenes in terms of energy policy. You can't trade that education there. And so that, I think, having that type of understanding of policy and organizing, you know, I think gave me a foundation for like how to like be a good elected official, along with like going to school and, you know, getting my degree. That's really important. But like all those things had a role in how I got there. So.
So what was the push, or I guess the initial, like did someone approach you and say, you know, Darrell, you look like you could be the next commissioner, or was someone put a bug in your ear, or you seen yourself like a spot was open up and that you can provide something for the community? I guess what put you in that position to where you started to, you know, then campaign and then become a commissioner?
Yeah, I think it's I think I knew it deep down inside that I wanted, so not just like, hey, I want to fight for like social justice issues, but I could see myself one day being a leader and actually helping to lead a lot of these changes. But I think I didn't always have the confidence to like do that. So it did. I was fortunate there were some people who saw something in me. I'll say, like, again, my former professor was somebody who saw something in me and, you know, and helped pour into me and be like a good mentor to me in my growth in that area. You know, good friends like, you know, our state senator, Sarah Anthony, who's a dear friend of mine.
Shout out to Sarah Anthony.
Exactly. Hopefully, hey, get her on the show. She'll be great. So, yeah, definitely get her on the show. But friend, mentor to me, you know, confidant, you know, just kind of, you know, us seeing leadership within each other, I think also was really beneficial to help grow my confidence and being able to see myself in that role. And I think there's just been like a whole host of people. I'll miss some other names, but there's a whole host of people that I've come to, and particularly in Lansing, who've taken a hold and really have poured into me and allowed me to get to the point of being able to feel confident enough to run and do some significant things at the county level and beyond. And so, I guess, yeah. So I guess I would say yes. There were folks who really just like helped me see. You know, another guy, Lindsay Huddleston, a great guy who does now. He does a lot of work with high school sports, but at one point was doing some work in politics as well. A younger black man just took hold. You know, so. People say they do it by themselves, like, at least I haven't seen it, you know, it took somebody, you know, definitely to help me get to that point, though, so, but yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a self-made type of thing, like, you grew into it, but also people were helping you grow into
Absolutely.
It. As they say, it takes, like, a village to raise a child, you know, like, no one is by themselves on a team, you know, that type of thing, so, no, that's good you were able to find those people to connect with who we're not only giving you sound advice and good advice, but they care for you as equally as much as they care for the community and wanted to see you succeed in that endeavors too.
And no ego. No, yeah. Like, no, I mean, you know, I think to do some of this work, you have to have some level of ego. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying in terms of like pouring into me and working with me, you know, they very generous with their time, you know, answering those late calls or email or whatever, like when I, you know, maybe I'm panicking about something or I don't have the answer, you know, offering that advice. I mean, all those folks that I mentioned and others have played a role in allowing me to do that, you know, so yeah, it's invaluable.
That is, what do they say? The teachers are responsible for the, you know, the millions and trillions of dollars that are built in the economy just because of who they influence at such a young age. So, not saying you were a kid, but like those people around you, they were, you know, like I was saying before, like they are in helping you grow. And that's mm-hmm. what's an invaluable, immeasurable amount to that.
Yeah.
What I want to know next is, was there something, maybe two or three things, values or lessons that you were able to gain as your tenure as a commissioner, as your tenure in you know, being here in Lansing? Mm-hmm. Were there three lessons that you could attribute to how you formed your character today? Like three, like, it doesn't have to be three, it could be less than three, like one. And what was like a big, like, this is, when you look back, this is the moment that like changed me?
That's a good question. I know one off the bat. Relationships are so important.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen too many times, and you know, people can say this is good or bad. I think it's just a nature thing, but relationships really make the world go round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have seen somebody have the greatest idea, you know, the most sound policy idea or proposal, but for some reason they didn't have the right relationships with folks who could possibly positively help them get like whatever the policy, you know, maybe it's to, I don't know, create a new park or something, I don't know. But it really comes down to the relationships, you know, maybe with the decision makers, not just the decision makers, but potential allies, folks in the community, regular folks, community mm-hmm. folks. Having those relationships are so valuable because they can help you get into rooms that you may not be able to get into by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
They can vouch for you and help amplify your message in different rooms if you're not able to.
Right, right.
That is so important. And I think people sometimes forget about that as they're trying to like accomplish something. Like you know, this is, we're people and our, how we interact with each other and work with each other is by talking and establishing like a rapport and like a shared sense of value. I mean, that's what we're doing when we're talking to each other. So that's so valuable. I think like an anti-lesson that I've learned is, I mean, I'll go back to it, just saying no, or just maybe more broadly, just setting better boundaries. I think folks came to know me as somebody who was like relentless and like had a heart for everybody, but just like, you know, super available and like, you know, just willing to just do a lot. And I have no regrets about it, but I think I think hindsight, being 2020, be a bit more strategic and add more boundaries around that work.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm, and I think others are too, prone to some burnout that comes from working like that.
Yeah.
So you can relate
fully
to that.
Understand. In multiple areas in life, just the burnout.
Yeah. That's, you know, I think going into this next phase and chapter in my life, doing more to like combat that, you know, and starts with setting barriers, and I guess a third, kind of jump into like a third lesson, really like taking the time for yourself and like appreciating like the small victories and the moments a bit more. That might be two lessons.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I was asking for three. So there's a good, that's a good three, I think, right there. You know, putting boundaries around your on your life, you know, and networking is something that you were able to achieve from that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I think that those are a couple good things right there.
Yeah, but appreciating, like, having appreciation and gratitude for, like, your own personal work and the things you're doing, and just for yourself, you know, valuing family time, friend time, alone time, because that allows you to be more of a balanced person, like, going into this work. So you're not, I think if you lean too much in one side, you know, I think everything gets thrown out of whack.
Right.
But I think a way you can do this is by appreciating it and actually building that time to actually attending to both sides of yourself. So,
mm-hmm. Are those things, you know, if you were to speak to your younger self, yeah, would you give that advice to your younger self, or would you say to your, before you wait, because it's easier. Everyone says, oh yeah, I definitely would.
Yeah.
For me, I personally probably wouldn't tell my younger self the things I know now. Mm. I would probably just say, you're gonna be fine. And the reason why I only say that, is, do you feel like you would have been better knowing the information, or are you pleased with the fact that you went through those scenarios and those situations where you got to here?
Yeah.
I know, it's a little...
I'm doing it because it's tough, because honestly, some of those lessons, you know, this would be frank, have been painful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did, you know, in this role and the work I've done, I've missed, like, family functions, events with friends.
Right.
I think that has, I wouldn't say it strained my relationship, but I think it could be a bit stronger, and, like, there's some shared memories and contexts with my friends and family I just don't have, because I just wasn't there, because I was either working on a political campaign or, like, working on an event, you know, and I prioritized those other things because I thought that would, you know, ultimately get me to my career, you know, and it has.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, on the flip side, though, while that was painful and I had those things, I think I would not appreciate it. Like those lessons I just said, I wouldn't have appreciated it had I not gone through, you know. And so that's why it's a bit difficult to say, you know, would I give those lessons, or would I just say, I actually like what you said, just to say you'll be fine. And I actually, maybe I would just say that. That's actually, I like that, Alexander. I think, knowing that, hey, you know, hey kid, hey Darrell, you're gonna be fine. You know, it's gonna be tough, you know, but you're gonna make it out at the other end.
Mm-hmm. You may have some sleepless and crying nights, but, you know, here's some tissue already, an extra pillow, you know.
Big guy, you got it.
Right.
You know, give yourself a pat on the back. So yeah. I would just tell my younger self, you'll be fine. There's gonna be a light at the end of the tunnel. Because there was definitely days that, you know, I could see a glimmer of a light, a twinkle. Eventually, obviously, came.
All right, cool. That's good. As I'm, you know, thinking of what more I would want to, you know, ask our former commissioner.
Sure.
You know, we've pretty much covered everything. You know, your next goals in life and where you've traveling this past month, you know, since you're, you know, now not the commissioner anymore, but, you know, you have so much more that you want to do for the community. So,
sure.
You know, I look forward to seeing or, you know, reading the news, you know, Darrell Slaughter, you know, big letters with, like, something awesome in there too. So I look forward to it. So thank you for doing this interview, my history story. Thank you, audience, for tuning in. Is there anything you would like to say? Anything extra, nothing else? You don't have to, by the way.
No, I do. One, I guess, piece of advice, or just the one
thing? Yeah, no, go ahead, yeah.
I mean, enjoy the ride. No, seriously, I mean, if you all hear the theme, appreciation, more gratitude, enjoy the ride, because one of those things, like, it's going to be, you know, it seems like it's here today. What's the old saying, here today, gone tomorrow?
Yeah.
There's so many things in my life I can point to, and... I think that if you can do that, I think you'll have a richer and fuller life, which I'm going to incorporate that into, you know, next phase of my life. So, but no, it's been great though. So
awesome. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in again. This was a good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or whatever the time you're listening to this podcast. We appreciate your time here at My History. I'm your host, Alexander Woods. Sayonara. Cool.
Awesome. And I was almost exactly, I know we talked about it being 30 minutes. I was almost exactly 30 minutes.
Sweet.